Lakeside. Tomorrow, partly sunny. There could be a shower or thunderstorm around. The high temperature 73. Friday, mostly cloudy with a shower or thunderstorm around again. High 65, then dry and cool for Saturday and Sunday. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, AM 1400 WRJN.
Thank you, EA. Right now in Kenosha, it's cloudy and 68. It is 64 and cloudy at the Municipal Airport in Burlington. Clouds and 67 at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport. And at Magnum.media's international headquarters in Racine, WRJN, mostly sunny, 66 degrees. The wind is out of the south at 13 miles an hour. The dew point is at 60. The relative humidity, 81%. And the barometric pressure is steady eddy at 29.93. It's 9 minutes after 9 o'clock, and good morning. It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin for Hump Day, Wednesday, October 5th, 2016, the only 10-5-2-16 in the history of humanity. Let us choose on purpose, with a purpose, to give a great day. There we go. It's a big morning here at WRJN, your radio friend. Going to have a community conversation this morning, a Candidates Forum brought to you in part by St. Monica Senior Living. It is with the current state representative from the Mighty 66th District, Representative Corey Mason. Good morning, Representative Mason.
Good morning.
And his libertarian challenger, Mr. George Myers. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Glenn.
How are you guys?
Good morning, Corey.
Good morning.
How are you guys?
Good. It's a beautiful Wisconsin day out there.
That's what I just got done saying.
Yeah. Thought I heard you say that.
So did you gentlemen watch the vice presidential debates last night?
I saw some of it.
I was busy at the council meeting, sorry.
No, nothing to be sorry about. Let's just say it this way. We're not going to do it their way because those guys were interrupting each other all the time. It was kind of nasty and not surprising that Tim Kaine, the senator from Virginia and the vice presidential nominee for the Democrats, and Governor Mike Pence, the Republican vice presidential nominee, were talking over each other a lot. But we're here to talk issues. We're here to enlighten the listeners, and really appreciate you guys taking the time to do it.
Glad to do it.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
We'll also take your calls if you have questions for the candidates, Representative Mason and George Myers. You can give us a call at 634-WRJN if you've got any questions. We're looking for really your questions more than your opinions, but you can sound off too. 634-9756. We also have the great Tom Carco, the WRJN news director, with us. Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Very excited to have him along for the ride. So I have to ask Representative Mason first. When I suggested this as an idea, you were all about it. Why would you do this as the incumbent?
Well, I think it's always good for voters to hear from the people that are on the ballot and hear the different ideas and have a dialogue. And I think the more voters are informed and can make an informed decision before they go to the ballot box, the better off our democracy is.
And George Myers, why did you decide to run against Representative Mason?
Well, I'm not really running against Representative Mason. I think there's a different way to approach politics, and that is my main concern is to, or my main objective, is to bring forth a libertarian viewpoint of the way things can operate. And it's not against anybody. It's just I'm promoting this particular type of ideology and think people should know more about it.
Well, why is the libertarian ideology, in your opinion, more beneficial to our community than either the Democratic or Republican perspectives?
Well, fundamentally, we're living in an extreme right now with government. There's just too much government. Most people recognize that. And the Libertarian Party of the three, the Democrats, Republicans, and Libertarians, is the only one that is adamantly wanting and promoting a smaller government. Now, that's not a good definition for libertarianism, but at this point, that is what we're talking about. In other words, as a libertarian, what I would do, just to really shrink it in a nice gradual manner, not going straight to a libertarian ideology, or because you can't do that, is just don't hire anybody for a while, and the bureaucracy will get smaller just on a natural attrition basis, and they will figure out where to make the real cuts. when it comes to where are we going to quit operating and just proceed in that manner. But at least it gets it going smaller, and that to me is a good start.
So what would you do if somebody in the bureaucracy who is obviously fulfilling some role retires or quits?
Mm-hmm.
That position just goes unfulfilled?
Well, no, not necessarily at all. In fact, that's what we doesn't need to happen, and we've seen it in City Hall, and we've seen it in other places where they've tried hiring freezes. They'll fill in there. In other words, there's other people that can fill in that position. We saw it recently at the City Hall when Rick Jones retired. There was two people below him that fulfilled that position for almost a year, and they did fine. We eventually hired a new commissioner, but we didn't have to. We could have taken one of them and promoted it up to the position, would have run perfectly fine, never having replaced that position. But Racine wasn't in the mode of shrinking the government. They were mode of keeping it the same size. So in a libertarian example, if we went into the state, yes, somebody who's important retires, but there's always people around there that know something about that job, can fulfill it and run it, and you don't have to put anybody in there. And somewhere down the line, there's something that's going on that doesn't have to go on that you can kind of back off from that type of thing, and that's what you'll end up backing off with. The bureaucracy will handle it, at least at that level. Now, there's going to come a point where you're going to have to do something more stringent, like maybe getting rid of entire bureaucracies. But that's further down the road.
Representative Mason, how bloated is the state government?
Well, I think, the interesting conversation with the libertarian idea, I had the privilege of studying a lot of political philosophy when I was in college and, you know, reading a lot of John Rawls versus Milton Friedman and sort of looking at sort of the ideological positions that people have about government. Should it be bigger? Should it be smaller? And it sounds really simple just to talk about it in a vacuum. What I found after 10 years of doing this is it's really less about bigger and smaller and more about does it work and does it work well and does it serve the people of the community that put people into place to give them those services that they require for public health and safety, for transportation, for infrastructure. And so I think too often we get into these conversations about is government too big, is government too small, and gloss right over is it smart, does it work well, does it work in a 21st century way, or are we still doing sort of, you know, 20th century approaches to government in ways that could be updated. And I think if you just start with is it too big, is it too small, you miss some things. Having said that, I think there are places where government ought not rear its head. I think people's medical decisions should be their own. I think people should have a right to say what they want and have a free and public press and worship in a way that they believe in without government interfering in that. But I also think there are times when if you're not careful about how you approach things that we need in the state, take roads, for example, and just say we're going to do a mix of cuts and credit card spending where you take the payments off, it actually winds up costing taxpayers more in the long run, and they get less for it. So it's not as simple as just saying, let's just shrink government slowly over time, and then it'll all work itself out. You find real-world examples all the time where it doesn't work, that you have to invest in a transportation infrastructure. But there are other times where I just assume in people's personal lives that the government butted out. And I think in some ways, government tries to get too big in people's individual liberties. So it depends. It's more of a nuanced answer than you maybe wanted, but I think it's more complicated than just let's slowly shrink government.
Okay, just just like to make a quick point here. You've seen a distinction right there. Corey Mason, which, you know, I respect his opinions, thinks that there's a question about whether a government's too big or too small. You know, it's just how it operates. The libertarian says unquestionably it's too big. It needs to shrink somehow. Let's get started on it.
But in what areas, just other than through attrition, would you like to see it shrink?
Well, I think the reason you're questioning that, Glenn, and I respect that, is that Right now, I'm not worried about the area. I'm talking about we're going to just start shrinking it everywhere.
But what if it's a critical area of a government service?
Well, I just explained that. If it's a critical area, it's not going to disappear. There's no bureaucracy that's one person strong. They've all got huge staffs, lots of people sitting around. Somebody's going to fill in that position. Let's just start at the beginning that. Now, as you get further down the road and it's getting, you know, let's say you've dropped 10, 15, 20% of your staff, now it's time to get down to the serious nitty-gritty of do we need this function? And our basic philosophy is that we tell people at this point, what most people recognize, is that we think that you can do better with your money than taking it from you and have it done for you by a government bureaucrat. So that is the basic philosophy that we see when it comes to, like Corey mentioned, some things like medical and some other particular services. We just believe that you can take better care of yourself than giving your money to somebody else to take care of you for you. It's that simple.
Can I give a real-world example about why that might be problematic? So take, for example, Department of Natural Resources. This is an agency that's charged with protecting the natural resources of the state and public health as it relates to water and air. Right now in northeast Wisconsin, in what's called the karst region of the state, it's got very porous soil. A third of the wells are poisoned due to ag runoff. And people have asked, well, why doesn't the DNR enforce the laws? Because you can't have that kind of runoff having an impact on the groundwater if it's a drinking water supply. And the answer is because the DNR has made so many cuts, they don't have the staff to enforce, right? So you have people literally getting sick and going to the hospital because government's not there to enforce the laws to make sure that people have access to safe drinking water, right? And that's just one example where if you just simply say, well, we're just going to make government smaller and smaller, and trust me, this administration has done a lot to try to make the DNR smaller and smaller. What winds up happening is the enforcement mechanisms to make sure that people have access to things as basic as safe drinking water goes unmet.
And this, Corey brings up a very, very interesting point because it's one area, it's a possible exception of what I'm talking about, but only in this regard. And this, we'd have to get it, this gets into the federal aspect of it. I would totally eliminate the federal government in Department of Natural Resources. Totally. Every state has enough bureaucrats around to handle their state perfectly well, and we don't need a federal bureaucracy doubling up on the individual when it comes to Department of Natural Resources. So you get rid of totally of the federal. Just wipe out that bureaucracy.
But what
entirely.
About specifically what Corey brought up, where the state DNR is also shorthanded, literally, he says, causing people to get sick.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, is that if you get rid of that, leave that money for the state, in other words, you reduce the income taxes that much where it can stay with the states and let them make sure they're handling their resources properly. And I would go further in saying all these public lands, like these national parks and that type of thing, turn it over to the states. Let them run it. And that might be one department where you might want to hold until you make sure it's got it under control because you've just gotten rid of all the federal overview. So and then these things need to be handled because the DNR is an important function, and if it's failing because of its inability to shift people in certain directions, well then that needs to be handled because we do need to do that. But in conjunction with it, if we get rid of the federal government entirely and when it comes to the Department of Natural Resources.
What would the implications, Representative Mason, be to get rid of the federal regulations regulating the natural resources in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, the way it works right now is actually the federal government delegates most of their authority under the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and the Clean Air Act to the states. So it's actually the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources that's responsible for enforcing federal standards around those areas. And then Wisconsin sometimes has additional requirements around wetlands or groundwater or other public health measures. But it's already delegated to the states. And ironically, what Governor Walker has chosen to do is actually turn away the federally funded positions that would do enforcement just so that there's fewer people at the DNR. I mean, again, it's not a it's not something that balances the books at the state level. It's just a choice that he made to have fewer positions that were entirely federally funded operating at the state level to do sort of a Wisconsin-based approach to some of these things.
I'll tell you another resolution that we have with regards to natural resources in its entirety, and that is we need to privatize more things and like rivers and lakes and that type of thing, where you don't have the government coming in and trying to handle it all. Right now, someone upstream can pollute the downstream users' water, but there is nothing the downstream users' water can do about it other than to go to the DNR. If you went to a more private type of system where they could go to the courts and get the on their own do something about the upstream polluter, you'll find a much better, faster, more thorough handling of natural resources. When we went into the Soviet Union after they finally collapsed and saw how the government handles natural resources, it does a very bad job of it. When you put it into private hands, and that would include rivers, streams, all the various natural resources, all the lands, you find a much better forest, everything gets handled better by the private sector than it does when you're using the government to try and handle it. And that goes back to our philosophy. We think if we leave you with your money, you'll do better with everything, not only your body, but your properties and your rest of your ownership, than when you turn the job over to the government by giving them money and then having you tell you what to do.
He's George Myers. He's the Libertarian candidate for the 66th District's State Assembly spot. Corey Mason is the current incumbent. He's the Democrat. This is Glenn Klein on WRJN's Community Conversations for Wednesday morning, along with News Director Tom Carco.
Gentlemen, let's talk transportation funding, or lack thereof, depending on who you talk to. Everybody's got an opinion, seemingly, these days. The governor has his. The assembly speaker has his, which somewhat differs from the governor. Democrats have theirs, and I imagine Mr. Myers has his own. Let's talk transportation funding. What's your feeling on what to deal with this problem, supposedly, that's out there? The roads are crumbling. We got problems. What do we do?
Let me jump in here first, sure. Corey, because Uber is a great example of what happens when you let the private sector take over transportation. All of a sudden, taxi rides are coming down. Getting where you want to go is becoming easier to do, and it's becoming cheaper. But that's because the private sector had to force its way in to the thing, because the government was there protecting the medallions for the taxi cab drivers and keeping the prices up. And that's really the way to get there quickly, is using the automobile, not these antiquity things like light rail or even commuter rail or even buses. You know, you can do so much better with an automobile. It's so much quicker, faster, maneuverable. If you let the private sector handle, it'll get handled a lot faster.
Yeah, I actually, I think it's great that you brought that up as an example. I actually was an author of the bill that allowed for statewide licensing for the use of Uber.
Thank you.
In this state. but I think your presentation of it, or your description of it, actually misses where the role of government comes into play. Because what was happening is we wanted to create a statewide set of standards that established background checks for the drivers, that required drivers to carry insurance, and made sure that there was some sort of standard in place to protect public health and safety who were going to use this Uber or Lyft, what are called transportation network companies. And so what wound up happening is there needed to be a government set of regulations to provide the kind of certainty both for the insurance industry and for Uber before they were comfortable operating here. There had to be a regulatory system put in place to both protect the public, clarify insurance law, and make sure that people were protected. I'm delighted that Uber is in Racine. I hear from people all the time, particularly around bar time, how useful it is to be able to get a ride and be able to move around. But getting that done required putting a statewide regulation in place.
And that's where we disagree. I don't believe it needs any regulation. As a matter of fact, we would do totally away with any type of licensing at all, and go to certification, so, and leave it up to the individual to be responsible for his own choice of which ride he's going to take. Now, we can have a voluntary certification system, just like the accountants use right now, with the certified public accountants versus anybody can do bookkeeping. So if somebody wants to say, hey, I've got a really safe cab, it's going to really, really good to ride in, and here's my certification, versus someone who says, No, I don't get any darn certification. I'm here to give you a ride, you want it or not. And it's up to the individual to make that choice. We don't need the government protecting us for what kind of cab we jump into. You can look at the car or trust the driver, but you have to learn. You have to take. See, this is why libertarian doesn't work in one great big fell swoop, because people's responsibility level has been driven so low with ideas like what Corey just said, where we need the government to protect you. Baloney. We don't need the government to protect you. We need you to figure out for yourself what's good and what's safe and what's bad and what's wrong, and take responsibility for your own life.
But what about Tom's question, the transportation funding aspect of this? How are you going to fund the needed transportation dynamic in the state of Wisconsin with Uber?
All I'm saying is you don't need to fund anything. In other words, right now what we're doing is we're taking automobile drivers and we're having them fund commuter rail and various and buses and this type of thing through the taxation system. If we were to just get away from that and let them figure it out on their own what they're going to do and not have the drivers do it, you'd probably see them disappear. Well, good. Uber can come in and pick up where buses left off and commuter rail left off.
At the same cost as a commuter rail?
Cheaper. Cheaper. Yeah, that's the nice part about it is that these buses and these commuter cost billions of dollars. You have buses, these great big huge buses driving around empty. Yeah, well, sometimes they get filled up, but most of the time they're not. You look at them go by and there's nobody in them. That's very expensive. It's a massive misuse of capital funds in the transportation area. Just get rid of that stuff. Let it die its own natural death like it would have done if the government hadn't come in and started subsidizing it. The private sector got out of commuter rail a long time ago, and only the government that's come in with its taxation and protective systems that's managed to give it some type of meager life.
But George, I mean, that all sounds simple. If we just had Uber and got rid of buses, we could pay for our roads. But that you couldn't, even if you got rid of all the buses in the state of Wisconsin, it would not cover the cost of the transportation infrastructure just for roads. To set aside trains and other things that I know that, and you know, commuter rail and other things that I know libertarians really dislike, just talk about the interstate system and the roads themselves. Even if you got rid of all the buses, it would not be adequate funding to take care of the transportation infrastructure. And the reason that becomes so important, aside from people not wanting to have to get their cars repaired because of all the potholes, is that's how we move goods and services to market. And that's, we rely heavily on a reliable transportation system for tourism and other industries that are really important for the Wisconsin economy. So a big question that we'll be facing the next legislature is, how do we adequately fund just the roads? I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. And to simply say, well, we'll get rid of some commuter rail or some buses or some other things doesn't even come close to covering a fraction of what the cost would be. What we've had happening in the state of Wisconsin is we've been, under Governor Walker's leadership, not adequately funding the roads, putting it on the credit card, basically paying for it by bonding. And so what will happen in the long run is you'll have poorer quality roads, people will get less and wind up paying more for it. If we're not willing to invest in the infrastructure needs that we have in this state. And that costs money.
That's true. And I just came back from Madison, by the way. And that junction between I-94 and 894, there is a beautiful off-ramp being built. It's up a story high. You know, it's got a great big curve into it. It had to cost billions of dollars. That the one before that was put in there was we got from one road to the other without any problems right now. And this has been going on for several years where there's this huge backup putting in this beautiful road. Another example is this desire to do something between Kenosha County and the airfield to widen that. These are things that we don't need right now. And what I'm saying is we can get through it till we get the DNR out of debt. So we need to just cut back on some of this. Yes, it's going to be a little bit stiff for a while, but the roads weren't crumbling. I've gone up and down that highway many times.
Roads are horrible.
The interstates are not horrible. That's not true.
Horrible. You drive in Illinois or Ohio or Michigan. Our roads are one of the worst in the Midwest by far. I drive a lot to the North Woods. It's really rough on my vehicle.
All right. Now, you're talking about somewhere, okay, way up north. Is that what it is you're saying?
Between here and the North Woods. It's terrible.
Because when I've driven on I-94 between here and Milwaukee, which I do a lot.
Even Robin Voss, who is the State Assembly
Republican. He's crying about it.
Well, I wouldn't characterize it that way, but, I mean, he recognizes that there's a problem disagreeing with his own Republican governor.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to hear something besides politicians talk about it, because when I come up from Illinois and I go on the interstate between here and Highway 20, I don't see any problems. When I go from 20 up to Milwaukee, generally a different, you know, same route, a different time, I don't see any problems. I'm not my car isn't bumping along. It's doing fine on it. It's a little bit crowded. You could use another lane. But I don't see the problem. All the times I've driven on 894 towards Madison before they started this construction, there was a turnoff there that was fine. And we're spending billions of dollars to make it an easier turnoff at a time when we're short of funds. Let's put it. The solution isn't to put more funds into it. The solution is just do a better job of it, and get money out of. But the buses and commuter rail, leave it with the highways, and you should be able to manage your funds with just the motorist taxes. I would definitely isolate that. I would get the motorists off the hook for the buses and the commuter rail and the various other things it pays for, and put it just on highways. And then once we've done that, now let's look and see if we've got enough money to do what we need to do. Because right now, both of you are putting the two together. You're saying we haven't got enough money, but we're supporting trains and buses. Well, what happens if we quit supporting that? Will we now have enough money?
Not even close.
And how about all the roundabouts? Every time I turn around, there's another roundabout. We can go. When we went to Madison, my friend was riding with me and said, here's the intersection. It takes you have to go through four roundabouts to get gas here, two to get to the gas station, and two more to get back on the highway. Different roundabouts. And for what? For one car that comes through there every minute or so? It's a ridiculous use of money that we're spending on these millions of dollars for roundabouts.
Even if you got rid of every roundabout, every bus, every train, you would not have the resources you need to maintain the infrastructure for the roads in this state. I mean, and so it sounds nice to say that if we could just get rid of some of these things that some people consider frivolous. I will say commuter busing is really important for moving people to jobs in this community and around the state. But set that aside. Say you're even right about all the buses and all the trains and all the roundabouts. It's not even close on being able to adequately fund the billions of dollars that you need to put into our transportation infrastructure. And that's more than just a nice thing for people to move around. It's how we move goods and services around in the state. It's how the economy works. And so to have two big things going against us, both locally and statewide, where we're not going to invest enough to redevelop our I-94 corridor, which is just prime area for additional business parks and economic development. But then also, there are other states that aren't confused about investing in their infrastructure. They do it. And it gives them a competitive advantage because they've invested in the things that they know make their economy work. And that's what we need to do here in Wisconsin.
He's State Representative Corey Mason, the Democrat from the 66th District. George Myers is here, the Libertarian candidate for that seat for the 66th. This is Glenn Klein and News Director Tom Carco on WRJN's Candidate Forum on Community Conversations this morning, brought to you by St. Monica Senior Living. When someone you care needs a little help, maybe it's time to look into assisted living at St. Monica's. For 45 years, St. Monica's has been providing compassionate, person-centered care for the residents on North Green Bay Road in Racine. St. Monica's really is like home, with great food, a loving staff, and lots of activities to participate in. One of the things people love about St. Monica's is the beautiful chapel. A Catholic Mass is held every day. They also have Protestant services, and all religious denominations are welcome. The move to assisted living is a big decision. Come see why St. Monica's is the right choice for so many. Visit stmonicasseniorliving.com to learn more. St. Monica's Senior Living on North Green Bay Road in Racine, where you are the heart of their home. We will return to our candidates' forum here on Community Conversations on WRJ. And we'll take your calls, too, if you have any questions for George Myers or Corey Mason. The number is 634-WRJN, 634-9756.
I'm John Tesh. I'm the next Intelligence for Your Life. Did you know to get ahead in your career, it only takes 1 minute a day for 3 weeks? I'll share the technique directly from a Harvard-trained positive psychology researcher. And are you having a midlife crisis right now, today? Take the true or false test. Next Intelligence for Your Life.
The John Tesh Radio Show tonight at 6 on your radio friend, AM 1400 WRJN.
Whether you learn to drive a tractor sitting on your grandfather's lap, or you're still a bit greener than your thumb, you know that on the farm, every decision has long-term effects. Say after a great season, you decide to lease 10 more acres, but a mid-July drought makes your well run dry. Or when Dad's old tractor seemed to be on its last leg, but a simple tune-up gave her two more seasons. Or the time you could afford to bring on 50 more head of cattle until the price of feed went up and beef went down. Life on the farm is unpredictable, but with nearly 90 years of experience helping farmers, we know it's never unprotectable. American Family Insurance knows protecting your livelihood goes beyond insuring the land itself. For just the right insurance for you, find an agent at amfam.com. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company and its affiliates. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin, 53783.
WRJN AccuWeather forecast. Warm today with times of clouds and sunshine. There can be an afternoon shower or thunderstorm in spots. High temperature 74. There will be a couple of showers and a thunderstorm overnight. The low tonight 54 in the 259 lakeside. Tomorrow partly sunny. There could be a shower or thunderstorm around. The high temperature 73. Friday mostly cloudy with a shower or thunderstorm around again. High 65, then dry and cool for Saturday and Sunday. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, AM 1400 WRJN.
Thank you, EA. We've got 68 degrees in Kenosha. It is 67 in Burlington. Dittos for Milwaukee. And here in Racine at WRJN, it is 66 degrees at 20 minutes to 10 o'clock on your hump day morning. It is a Wednesday community conversation candidates forum with State Representative Corey Mason of the 66th District, along with his challenger, the Libertarian George Myers. This is Glenn Klein, along with WRJN News Director, the great Tom Carco.
Gentlemen, voter identification seems to be an issue of late. Still, it's supposed to be in place. Should have been a long time ago, probably, but it seems to be still hung up in the courts in some fashion. The election is a month away. Can you assure the public out there that they're going to be able to get out there and cast a vote? They're going to have the ID needed to cast the vote for this very important election coming up.
Well, it's a mess. I'm not somebody who supported voter ID legislation at any point. Proponents of it have yet to prove that there's actually a voter fraud problem of any real merit or scale. And what we find is when you put these things into place, as it was later revealed in the court case, is that this is really about suppressing the vote of certain groups of people, usually minorities, older Americans, and students who just happen to be more likely to vote Democratic than Republican. And so it's really one of the most cynical things I've seen in the 10 years that I've been in office. It's really the new Jim Crow in terms of putting policy in place that make it harder for certain groups of people to vote. This is an area where I don't think more government is helpful. I think it actually deprives people of one of their most basic liberties in their democracy, which is basic suffrage, the ability to cast a vote and be heard. And, you know, democracy only works when we're reflecting the will of the electors who put us in office. And if Republicans continue to play games and then it's revealed in these court cases that it wasn't really about trying to stop any so-called voter fraud, it was about suppressing certain voters, that's shameful. In real terms, it's a mess. It's about a month out, and there's real questions about whether or not these temporary IDs will even count or work. It's back in front of the federal judge. There was a brief filed yesterday saying it's such a mess, we should just throw out the voter ID bill entirely for this election until we can figure it out. And I think that would make the most sense if we're at all serious about having fair and free elections.
I don't think there's anything more important to protect than the vote. It's a very critical aspect of our life. And only people that are eligible to vote should be voting. And I can't speak to how much the fraud actually is. You certainly hear a lot about it. We have had one person here in Racine that was prosecuted for voting many times in an election several years
back. Well, you're from Chicago originally, George.
Yeah,
well, vote early, vote often. You know the slogan.
That's right. That's right. When I die, I want to go be buried in Chicago because then I can still vote.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So it's like we have no problems at all with people coming to this country to work. Let's bring in the immigration thing. The problem is when they come here, they somehow arrange to become a voter also, which is totally unacceptable. You can come here to work, but you only members get to vote. And the way you become a member is you pass the test and you find out what this country's all about and what is our heritage, what is our culture. By the way, we're the only country in the world that does not have an ethnic culture. Our culture is based in the Constitution. It's based in that particular aspect. That's how this country was created, and that's the basis of our culture is the Constitution. So when you bring people in, and even people born here that don't know anything about the Constitution, all they know is that how they're going to get a handout or what's going to do good for them. You've already corrupted the vote. Libertarians wouldn't even necessarily have voting a birthright. You would have to pass a test just like you do in school, and almost every school teaches the Constitution, and that's good. They just need to really start teaching
it right.
That's
the first time I've heard that, but not this libertarian. 634-WRJN is the phone number to call, 634-9756, as we have our candidates forum with the two candidates running for the state representative spot in the 66th District, George Myers and Corey Mason. And caller, you are on the air with the candidates. Good morning. Hello? Now, that's the kind of call I like.
All right, yeah, let me just finish up with that with your comment. Reason Magazine has had an article on the questionability of just anybody voting without any knowledge about what the government and how that corrupts our government. So it's not just me, and you may not have heard of it before, but there should be some standard for being a member of this country and being, you know.
Isn't that standard supposed to be you're supposed to be a citizen?
Right. That's right. And there should be some standard for citizenship. In other words, if you don't understand.
But doesn't the Constitution say if you're born in the United States or if you go through the legal process of becoming a citizen, you're a citizen?
No, it doesn't say that. That was part of the slavery thing where if a person was born here, they decided, well, you weren't going to have to if you were born here. That's right. That is part of the Constitution. Okay, agree with that. And the 14th Amendment included that they wanted to include slaves in that they didn't have to go through a different process because they'd been born here. And I understand that with the Constitution, and I think that's great. That's in the Constitution. But the problem with it is unlike when that thing was written, people don't understand the Constitution anymore. So they are really just voting outside of the realm of what they were expected to know in those days. I mean, women didn't even have the right to vote when the Constitution was first established. So that was amended to make that. And then we started changing the age group. And so there have been various changes since that time. But they said the theory was when it was written was that you had to have some kind of investment in the country and know something about the country.
Right,
in order
you had to be
vote.
A white landowner.
Which is basically what it was. That's right. And that got changed. But the thing
Thankfully.
is the standard should still have been there. We should have been able to pick it up with the schools and make sure that people understood
what you're advocating, please. Correct me if I'm wrong, what you're advocating, George Myers, is for a new standard to be established.
I would like that, but I'm not pushing that. That's not a campaign issue. But the main thing I am pushing is that we don't let just anybody walk up to the polls and claim to be a member and claim to be eligible to vote and just vote on their say-so. You have to have some evidence that they are at least born here, they're at least been taught the Constitution, at least become a citizen before you vote.
Well, let's get back to Tom's question about the voter ID.
Right.
People need to show ID, don't they? They need to be registered to vote. I mean, how would you even know that person who is he or she says he or she is?
Right. So after exhaustive research in the federal case trying to find the supposed widespread fraud that people believe occurs, they found less than 10 actual cases over years and years of evidence presented of actual voter fraud occurring in the state of Wisconsin, right? So this idea that there's somehow people cheating.
But is there any proof that the Republicans pushed this thing to slow down the momentum for people, as you said, who would most likely vote Democratic? There's no proof of that either.
There is, actually. If you saw the case, there was actually former Republican staffers who testified at the trial saying when the Republicans went behind closed doors, they were high-fiving each other about how great it was going to be, that this was going to suppress the vote in Milwaukee and other places. That's what they were actually saying behind closed doors. So they were coming out on the floor of the legislature and claiming that this was for voter protection and integrity of our elections publicly, but in private actually were congratulating themselves about what a great job this was going to do. So under the actual evidence that's been presented in a court of law, fewer than 10 cases of actual fraud that they can find, and potentially hundreds of thousands of people disenfranchised if they don't have the proper ID. And I'll give you an example. I had a constituent call me earlier. She's in her 90s. She was born down south. She doesn't have a birth certificate. She's been voting for decades in Racine. Well, now under the new law, it's a question about will she be able to vote or won't she because she doesn't have a written birth certificate. She was born, I think she said she was born in Alabama or Mississippi. She doesn't have one. Well, she's still a voter. She's still a citizen. So if we don't have widespread fraud actually happening, we fewer cases than ever. And I honestly think it's a bit of a teasing irony that here today the Libertarian is advocating for more restrictions for people to exercise their right to vote, and the Democrat is saying there should be fewer government restrictions to make sure that everybody gets to vote. But listen, the whole sort of rigmarole about this false narrative about there being fraud and needing to keep the integrity of the elections in place, it's not an actual real problem. The fraud is when you disenfranchise people from being able to participate in an election.
He is Corey Mason. He is the state representative of the mighty 66th District. George Myers is here. He is running as the Libertarian candidate. This is Glenn Klein along with WRJN News Director Tom Carco. And caller, you are on the air. We'll try it again with the candidates. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I want to know about this 8-year driver's license
for 8 years.
Can't you get this down for older people? Because there's not people 90 years old driving with Alzheimer's and stuff like that.
Thank you for your call. Who wants to take that one?
I don't mind taking that one. I think there's a. There is a problem with, well, I see people, you know, practically can't even walk hardly, but they climb into this big car and they're off driving. And it's a little bit of a scary thing that type of person is behind one of these 1,000, 1,500, 2,000-pound vehicles. The thing is my observation is it takes two people to make an accident. If two of those get together at an intersection, they're probably going to have an accident. But as long as one of them is able-bodied and is able to negotiate his car well, there will be no accident. And I would say give it a shot. I mean, life is not going to be totally safe. You're going to have some risk involved.
So you're okay with the 8 years?
I have no problem. I've looked at that. I finally reconciled it. That's my feeling. That's my personal feelings. We can't start making everybody a perfect driver. Nobody is a perfect driver. People, cell phones are more dangerous probably than that person that is a cripple getting into the car, because that's where a lot of the accidents happen. And yet people are driving around with cell phones, some even still texting when they're driving. So that's the really dangerous stuff.
Well, it's a good thing there's a law in place that prohibits texting while you're driving to keep.
Oh, yeah, that does a lot of good, Corey.
It does quite a bit of good. AT&T does an event here in town every year about the dangers of people texting and driving and the real-world accidents that causes. But the caller raises an interesting point that maybe talks about what the role our government might need to be to keep our roads safe and our drivers safe. And is there an appropriate time as people get older? And I know this is a tough issue because people who are older really don't want to give up.
People are getting older.
Right.
They're living longer.
And the freedom to be able to move around in your car is a big deal. But there have been proposals in the past about should older drivers more frequently have to be tested to make sure that they are not a danger to themselves or the other people driving in public. I think it's a fair question. I don't know where exactly that'll be. There's certainly we've had physicians come and testify in the past who deal with older folks who say that, you know, at a certain age, it's hard to have a bright line, though. I mean, as I knock on doors, I will see 90-year-olds who look great, and then I'll knock on the next door and see a 70-year-old who's really struggling. So it's also hard to come up with a bright line age that says, at this age, we need to look at the license more frequently. But you can also show statistically that over a certain age, it might make more sense for people to be evaluated to make sure they're still safe to drive.
Just a quick comment there. Corey does describe the problem very, very well. And that is where you get into, if you're going to try and solve it with government, you're going to give up a lot more in the way of rights, privacy, and your life than you do if just going ahead and letting people take responsibility for themselves and for the other driver, even when they're driving down the road. Drive defensively, whatever you want to call it. Just drive well and stay alert, and these people won't cause.
But you realize that two able-bodied people get into car accidents all the time, right?
That's right. That's
whether
I'm
they're
saying.
Texting or not.
That happens.
But defensive driving is a very good idea.
Just take some responsibility. You're out there driving. Pay attention to your driving. Pay attention to what's going on, not just your car, but other cars going around you. And you'll be surprised how many accidents you avoid. I've had people go driving through an intersection the wrong way in a red light, just zipping by. Well, you know, I was alert. I just had to brake a little
bit.
When's
the last car accident you had?
I really haven't had a car accident. I mean,
in your life?
No, the I've had a couple claims, but it was when my car was parked. The closest I had to one was when I was on my cell phone and I bumped the car in front of me. All right, we got out, checked. There was no damage at all. I mean, it was that light a bump. But that was when I was on my stupid cell phone. That's why I learned real early with cell phone usage. Don't use it when you're driving.
He's a very good driver, George Myers. He's a libertarian candidate for the mighty 66 state representative spot. We've got the incumbent here, the Democrat, Corey Mason. This is Glenn Klein on Community Conversations on WRJN, being brought to you by St. Monica's Senior Living Center with News Director Tom Carco.
Gentlemen, since time is getting short, let's talk about the ongoing heroin epidemic and the problem with overdoses in society. It's a big problem today. And what do we do about it? I'd like to hear your perspective.
Open it up, legalize. You guys get rid of all these restrictions on drugs. The problem is when you make it illegal, you drive it underground. People that need help can't get it. They're afraid to get it. They're afraid you're going to go to jail. It's not. And heroin is really, really rough. I understand that it's very addictive. But the solution is not for the government to come in and tell you cannot do this to your body. You can do what you want.
The reason we have the heroin epidemic that we do, Representative Mason, is because of government regulation on OxyContin and other opiate drugs. And so people couldn't get their prescription drugs.
Right.
So they had no alternative but go to the streets. That is not regulated. That is not in any way controlled. What do we do about this, sir?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was just contacted by the Racine Fire Department actually in the last couple of weeks about the rising incidence of heroin overdose here in Racine. So, you know, I'd heard about it both nationally at the state level, but to hear that it's actually a real problem here is a real issue. They've certainly been talking about there's this new drug called Narcan, I believe, which is literally an anecdote to a heroin overdose. But they've talked about how the drug's now being cut with even more and more powerful drugs, that it's a real issue. I think that government needs to be smarter about the way that it deals with this. I think we need to do a lot more on mental health services, particularly for alcohol and other drug abuse issues. I think trying to find a way, instead of just taking drug addicts and throwing them in prison for years and years, as opposed to having diversion programs and trying to get people off the drugs,
we
is
have
a much
to
better
stop
approach.
The moralization of this, because this is the problem. There's a significant segment of the body politic in this state and in the country that sees people who use drugs as morally corrupt. And as soon as you say that something is evil, versus a health problem or just a human choice, this is, we had this already. It was called prohibition. We saw what happened with that. Obviously, we've got an alcohol problem, but at least it's not driven. People can make a decision. They're not being, if you have a glass of wine with dinner, you're not being considered evil.
Yeah, we're back to the responsibility issue. You have to be responsible for your own life. And if you're, the more irresponsible you are, the worse you're going to do, and the more you turn over to government to deal with it instead of yourself, the worse society's going to get. We've just seen it in too many examples throughout history, as a matter of fact, not just in current time. There are programs that get in there and educate people. I haven't seen it too much in the United States, but I've heard about it in places like Colombia, which was the drug capital of the world. They went in there with this Truth About Drugs program, just getting in there and finding out what drugs are. Teaching. I participated in one for a couple times at a school. I went in with someone who was using this type of drug, and I was amazed because when we dealt with the education of the drugs, we included cigarettes, alcohol, and medical drugs, saying here is the way drugs work, whether regardless what it is, as well as the street drug. And that education process does more to get kids off of drugs than any cop in a uniform or a law or a jail has accomplished.
I do think there's a substantive difference between somebody having a glass of wine and somebody shooting up heroin, right? Not in terms of a moral judgment, but in terms of just like the effect on your body and what that means for you long term. I do think this is an example where I would say government should be smarter about how this deals, how they deal with this issue. For decades in this country, we've treated the drug problem as a criminal problem and spent lots and lots of taxpayer money putting people in jail for decades for their drug problems. And I think if you look at other societies who also look at it as a public health crisis and give people services to get themselves off of those drugs and the negative effects that they may have on themselves and the rest of society, that you have far greater success and fewer lives.
Really. And we do agree on that.
Well, and on that note of agreement, we are going to thank Libertarian candidate George Myers and Democrat, the incumbent state representative Corey Mason from the 66th District. Guys, thanks for doing this and for being so civil. You can do it civilly. You can agree, disagree agreeably. We've just proven it over the last 60 minutes. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Glenn.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, a Magnum.media station.
I just feel like singing Kumbaya on this Wednesday morning. WRJN covers the world at 10 o'clock.
Storm readiness in the Southeast, the VP debate. I'm Evan Haining. As Hurricane Matthew approaches Florida, some residents have been